heard that Kalanick would be stepping away from his daily role as CEO. It sounded more like a sabbatical. The New York Times is reporting that Travis Kalanick has resigned as the CEO of Uber.
In the past, people in your position have been advisors to the president on picking future chairs of the Federal Reserve. Has the president solicited your advice on who the next Fed chair should be?
Well, on all the financial regulatory positions, Gary Cohn and I are working very closely together in making recommendations to the president, so that he and I have interviewed all the people and have made joint recommendations to the president. Let me just say, we haven't made any decisions yet on the Fed chair, whether we're going to have a new one or we're not going to have a new one, and we'll be working closely together with the president as we consider all the issues.
McDonald's plan to switch from frozen to fresh beef in its Quarter Pounder burgers is a bet on taste over time. The rollout of the fresh beef Quarter Pounder expected in U.S. stores by mid-2018. And test markets in Dallas already reporting their Quarter Pounder sales rose 30% with the fresh option.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It is June 21st, 2017. Welcome to another business day, and welcome to summer. It happened last night at 11:24 p.m. Central Time. Summer is upon us. This will be the first full day. I guess we're kind of lucking out. There are parts of the world that are very, very hot. Here in the U.S., here in Chicago, we've had kind of a nice, mild couple of days here as summer arrives officially. We've got a big show for you coming up a little bit later on in the program. Doug Roth is back with us from Playground Hospitality in Chicago. He's brought another special guest. We'll be talking about food and farmers markets and how that might impact your visit to a restaurant this weekend or tonight. And in just a minute, we'll talk a little bit about how things are affecting travel, the travel ban, Brexit, all of the upheaval around the world, too, some of the bans on laptops. We will have a guest with us from the Global Business Travel Association. But first, let's check the markets on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Asian markets are mostly lower after Tuesday's losses on Wall Street, a global stock benchmark decision. Provider's decision to add mainland China listed shares to a widely followed stock index did little, though, to boost appetite, as the decision was widely expected. Oil prices fell. Japan's Nikkei, the South Korea market, Hong Kong all finished lower. Shanghai's composite index finished higher. Right now on the markets this morning, as we look at them, futures are pointing toward a weak opening on Wall Street, off about 14 on the Dow, nearly 20 on the NASDAQ, S&P off about 6 points. In Asia, as we mentioned, most of the markets are lower. The Nikkei off almost a half a percent, almost a full percent on the Asian Dow, half a percent on the Hang Seng as well. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC, all lower in Europe. The CAC leading the way off almost a percent, down 53, almost 54 points. You heard there in the opening montage, the Uber CEO has resigned under investor pressure. Travis Kalanick resigned. The statement issued to the New York Times yesterday that he accepted a request from investors to step aside. Kalanick says the move will allow the ride-sharing company to go back to building itself rather than becoming a distraction by another fight possibly involving him trying to stay on. Kalanick had already been on indefinite leave amid criticism of his management style and following the death of his mother in a boating accident. Top aide to President Trump says the White House plans to privately negotiate a massive overhaul of the tax system with Republican leaders in Congress, just like they're doing with health care. The strategy possibly could end up giving rank-and-file members little, if any, say over what is finished, what comes out of the finished product. You heard Gary Cohn, we're talking about him in the opening montage as well. He's Trump's top economic aide, says the administration doesn't want to engage in prolonged negotiations after the package is made public this fall. You seeing a trend develop there? We are going to talk a little bit about travel this morning. We have with us the guest. Our guest this morning is the COO and Executive Director of the Global Business Travel Association. Mike McCormick's with us. Travel is being impacted in a big way around the globe. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So what are the headline numbers here? We're seeing a lot of arrows going down. What's the real story?
Well, arrows are going down. We've had some tough headwinds for the first part of this year. And unfortunately, a lot of those are policy-driven that are really impacting the numbers. And some of the impact we haven't even felt yet.
And you say that another way of putting that is this, these are sort of self-inflicted wounds, aren't they?
Yeah, a bit. From the first executive orders around travel, the so-called travel ban orders, even though that they weren't ultimately upheld and are in a bit of a holding pattern while the court fights still play out, that first week had an impact when they were in effect. During that 1 week, we saw $185 million worth of bookings lost and business travel bookings just here in the U.S. alone. And then after that, subsequent events have had even a bigger impact.
So with the data that's available now, you've been able to sort of project this out for 2017. And the number is kind of staggering. $1.3 billion could be lost in travel-related expenditures. What does that cover, Mike?
Well, yeah, what happens is that this is primarily travel from Europe and from the Middle East coming to the U.S., and it's the impact it's had once people get here on the ground. There's almost about $1 billion worth of bookings lost in those markets that we wouldn't necessarily see in terms of impact here in the U.S. because those air tickets are bought over there for travel to the U.S. But once those people come to the U.S., whether it's leisure travel or business travel, and get here on the ground, it's lost bookings in terms of hotel, car, ground, restaurant, and all the related tourism and business travel expenditure once people get here. And that's the $1.3 billion that we see will be lost this year here in the U.S.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors gave up some of Monday's gains yesterday. The Dow Jones fell 62 points to 21,467. The Standard & Poor's 500 lost 16.5 points. The NASDAQ composite closed 51 points lower at 61.88. Travis Kalanick has stepped down as chief executive officer at Uber, the ride-hailing service that he helped to found in 2009 after a shareholder revolt made it untenable for him to stay on. In his resignation letter, Kalanick said, "I love Uber more than anything in the world." The energy industry's best efforts to push up crude prices just haven't worked. Now U.S. oil companies are likely to tap the brakes on new drilling. West Texas Intermediate futures for August were trading yesterday at around $43 a barrel. TJX Company has struck on a formula that's bucking the troubled trend in retailing. The discount department store chain has seen sales at its TJ Maxx and Marshall stores rise for 33 straight quarters and scouting new space for locations. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Travel economy is in the spotlight today. Mike McCormick is with us. He's the COO and executive director of the Global Business Travel Association. We're talking about some lost travel dollars because of Brexit and then the Trump administration's first travel ban. Mike, I'm kind of curious, have you been able to put like a jobs number on this too? We talked about how much money we might lose in these different economies, but what are the jobs costs here?
Yeah, in total this year, we would see about an impact of about 24,000 jobs that could be lost as a result of all this activity. And it really comes down to uncertainty. You said it about Brexit. It's the executive orders around the travel ban orders, the uncertainty around the potential of a widespread electronics ban, and of course the tragic terrorist events that we see around the world. All of that is having an impact on traveler mentality, both business and leisure.
We've seen this before in the past. It's a negative perception around one government policy or another. How easily is that changed, and can it be changed midstream here?
Well, unfortunately, the change to put things into the negative can happen a lot quicker and have a dramatic impact, and it's very hard to regain that kind of traveler confidence, traveler trust over a period of time. The only good news here, I would say, is that we're working off of a very healthy foundation in terms of the base of business travel and the economy at large. Even though we're not seeing or weren't forecasting huge growth this year, again, this is all self-inflicted type of policies and activity that's really having a impact on travel.
Yeah, do you think there's the knowledge generally in this new government that this has such a ripple effect? Do you think there was much thought that went into this before implementation and knowing what the possible economic, negative economic consequence would be?
No, I don't think that was really thought through. And the irony, of course, is that our president is a hotelier. So the assumption would be that that he would and the administration would be very pro-travel. The first policies and kind of early, approach to their priorities weren't positive. But hopefully now we'll see a change in that mentality. The latest efforts to look at air traffic control and look for a way to put some big investment into modernizing that is certainly a step in the right direction. And hopefully, again, over time, some of these policies will, adapt and be more business friendly and more travel friendly.
We've mentioned a couple times here this potential laptop ban. We've already seen it coming from some countries. There seems to be the continuing conversation that this might still come for other flights coming to the U.S. How devastating would that be?
Well, it certainly would have an impact. Again, with this particular, electronics ban, the intelligence threat is real and the concern is real. How do you deal with this type of potential terrorist activity? And our officials in Homeland Security and TSA are working really, really hard to try to find a way to mitigate that increased risk without going to a full-blown electronics ban. Everyone recognizes the impact it would have both on business travel particularly and also just productivity and certainly all of the change that would have to incur, both for companies and for the airlines themselves.
Do groups like yours have a seat at the table? Are there discussions about the impacts that we've been talking about going on, and are the doors at least open to discussion?
Yes, they are. I mean, we've worked and built relationships over the years, both here in Washington and also in Brussels, to really deal with the people, to the officials who are working hard every day to deal with these issues. They are really open to, basically stakeholder feedback and work well with us. So fortunately for us, I mean, those doors are open. And, we've got, really dedicated people that are trying to deal with issues like that on our behalf.
All right, Mike, good of you to be with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
Mike McCormick, the COO and Executive Director of the Global Business Travel Association. You can follow them on Twitter at GlobalBTA.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, 538, and this is our Wednesday edition of the show, and it is summertime officially. That means farmers' markets are in full swing, and it likely means your favorite restaurants are taking full advantage as well. And so are we this morning. Our favorite restaurant and hospitality expert is with us on The Opening Bell this morning, Doug Roth, president and founder of Playground Hospitality in Chicago. Doug's owned and operated a number of different restaurants throughout his career, including Bistro 110, Bistro 100, Black Hawk Lodge, Don Roth Restaurants, the award-winning Red Moon. And we're happy to have you back this morning. Doug, good morning.
Good morning.
You have brought a guest and food, and the studio this morning smells delicious. Let's welcome your guest, too. Martin Pfefferkorn is here, and I'll let you do the introduction, Doug.
Well, thank you. Actually, last time we met, we had a restaurateur from New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Speak a little bit about where restaurants are going that have been with us for quite some time and how they reinvent themselves. I was thinking along with yourself that, geez, this is such a beautiful day, and wouldn't it be great if we could talk a little bit about farmers markets and the things that are happening today in and around Illinois. And I thought of my good friend Martin, who is one of the top people in culinary at Hyatt. And I'm going to ask Martin to tell a little bit about himself right now, and most importantly, too, a little bit about what Hyatt does when it comes to sourcing and sourcing very fresh and locally.
Martin, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you for having me today. I'm Martin Pfefferkorn. I'm the director of culinary for Hyatt Hotels. When Doug asked me to come on with you guys and talk a little bit about farmers markets, my heart grew up as I actually grew up on a small farm in Austria. Mm-hmm. So talking about farms is definitely one of my passions. And going back to Hyatt, supporting local farms is a big part of our philosophy. We have a global philosophy. It's called food thoughtfully sourced, carefully served. And one big part of that is supporting local farms. And as you can imagine, a big company has big purchasing programs. However, our chefs are instructed to go outside that and buy from farmers markets or local farms. And most of our chefs are extremely passionate when it comes to that. They go and, you know, tour the farms. They have great relationships with the farmers, with co-ops. And, of course, you know, that shows on the culinary side and on the plates what our customers get and the food.
What are the benefits of doing that? Is it that nowadays people's tastes know immediately when something's fresh as opposed to not being fresh?
I mean, fresh is always better.
Yeah.
And, you know, if someone, if product is picked at the right time, you want to eat asparagus in the spring. You want to have your strawberries in the spring. If you eat them in the fall or in the winter, they come somewhere from Peru, Chile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not the same quality.
And so you guys, actually, I would have loved to have tagged along on this. You went around to Farmer's Market in Chicago. Doug, this is like the time of year when this is all happening. All the good stuff is coming in, right?
Well, actually, Illinois is number three when it comes to farmers markets in the United States. We have over 500 in the state, and we honed in on Evanston, actually. Interesting thing about Evanston, according to a couple of the farmers, is that is what they feel is a very true farmers market. It is very representative of many of the people who come from Michigan, Indiana, and in Wisconsin, and these are, not to say that others aren't, but are serious farmers appealing to serious buyers. And what we saw was some very interesting things that were happening this time of year. One farmer that we spoke to, Chris Nichols from Nichols Farms, he is a third-generation farmer, has really, has it really in his blood. All of his family members, unlike his parents, have gone to college and have come back to the farm and had some really interesting aspects about what's transpiring in today's world in farmers markets. And I'll give you just one example, for instance, is that that what we're seeing today from a business standpoint is that labor, like everywhere else in different industries, is becoming very difficult. And that obviously is a price point is going to change as a result of the fact that it's harder to find people to work on farms. Another instance was totally to another level where a couple that are out of Western Illinois that have a farm that is a little bit more eclectic. What they actually do is they have people who come in and can book the farm, stay over the week or weekend, and they can experience what it is like to farm. I'll let you pronounce it because I missed a couple days in second grade in phonetics.
Kinnikinick. Martin, did I do that right? Kinnikinick.
Kinnikinick, yeah.
Kinnikinick Farm. This is where they get the full experience of being on a farm.
Exactly. And it's interesting, when I was there, most of the individuals were there were from Belgium or from France and wanted to experience what it's like to be on an American farm. And they do a wonderful job of it. They also have wonderful product. And what's very interesting about them is they don't necessarily typify in most people's minds as to what you perceive the farmer as. They happen to be two graduates, one from Harvard, one from the University of Chicago, actually. The gentleman who runs the farm is a professor, or had been a professor at the U of C. Sort of checked out and said, this is what we're going to do.
A couple of things I want to unpack there. First of all, you hit something that I'm sure hit a lot of people's ears as they were hearing it, price point going up. Does that mean for consumers we're going to see vegetables that we buy at these markets be more expensive? That's going to be translated, obviously, from a restaurant standpoint. You're paying more, so are we going to be paying more too for a restaurant tap?
Well, I'm interested in what Martin has to say about this as well. I'll just give a short summary of what is transpired. In the last couple of years, prices have been very, very stable. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of product, and that has to do a lot to do with weather. Now, again, no matter what you feel necessarily about weather and weather change, Certainly this year, they're saying, because May was so cold and we had such a warm spell in this part of the last couple of weeks, that the strawberries, for instance, are a little bit different, that you're going to get a little bit of taste differentiation in some of the things that they've been planting. But I think what's going to happen is that it may be buried in some of the costs right now because of menu pricing, because it just is not that big a change. But again, that you have still quite a bit of product out there. But that's what I'm seeing. Martin, you may see something different.
No, 100% agree with you, Doc. I mean, seasonality is a big thing. Climate change, some people believe it, some people don't, has a big part to do with it. But going to menu pricing, we see that our customers are willing to pay for organic, for, you know, pasture-raised products, for stuff where they can relate to the farmers, mm-hmm. and especially if it's local. And people, they support that kind of cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
People, I think, really steer away from commodity products.
And there's also, too, this back to the taste buds issue. You mentioned that strawberries may taste a little different. Are you seeing, Martin, that people actually are good at this now, where they can find those minute little differences in how things taste from season to season?
Oh, well, most definitely.
Yeah.
People are really educated when it comes to food now. And, again, we're trying to provide seasonal food, and people know what seasonal food tastes like. You know, again, going back to what I said before, your strawberry in November tastes like probably not much. Where if you get the strawberries you have on your salad here, what I brought you, those are sweet as sugar, and they taste like a real strawberry because they've been picked. What, we got them on Saturday, they've probably been picked on Thursday.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, too, when we go into our favorite restaurant. You know this firsthand. What do we look for in the menu to find those fresh things? If it's not, I mean, hopefully it would be clearly listed there that this is fresh from a farm recently. But if it's not, how do we look for those things?
I mean, the way our chefs write the menus is key. Right? I mean, we want to highlight the local farms we support. We want to highlight the seasonal product and call it out on the menu. It shouldn't be just a strawberry salad. It should be strawberries from farm. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you know.
We've been talking a lot about, you've mentioned strawberries a couple of times. You mentioned asparagus, too. What are the great things right now on menus in the spring time of the year?
I mean, we saw a lot of great stuff at the farmer's market, or what we're also using. You know, tomatoes are coming in now. You have snap peas. It's high season right now. You get some fennel is coming in. Right now, we're kind of going over almost to the summertime, where squashes are slowly but surely available. Some beautiful lettuces, arugula, you know, stuff that has a shorter growing time. But right now, it's prime season for beautiful salads and vegetables.
It's a delicious time of the year, too. Doug, I was moved because before we went in the air, we were talking a little bit about your farmer's market journey. And there's a little bit of sort of, I don't know, how intrigue, I guess, is maybe one word to talk about. Some of these farmers markets that we go to, you found in your investigating that maybe not all of them are actual farmers. Is that something that's happening? Tell us about that.
Well, yes. In speaking with some of the purveyors that were there, they said that one thing that they enjoyed about Evanston was that very few of the farmers that were there were peddlers. And peddlers are basically individuals who go down maybe to Fulton or to other local produce areas, buy produce, and then bring them up to other farmers' markets and then sell them for three or four times what their normal price is. My recommendation is, no differently almost than you would ask your doctor where they went to med school, is say, where's your farm? Can we visit your farm? Mm-hmm. Because I haven't met really a farmer yet, be it of produce or hogs or chickens, that don't want you to come by and see what they do. They're very proud. And so that's a way of differentiating it, is when they say, well, I really, it's a friend of a friend, be a little bit wary of that.
it's amazing that they aren't found out more often, because we're in that period of time now where consumers are asking those questions more often, even at restaurants. We talked about this last time.
Yes.
How consumers say, hey, where did my food come from? Where did you get this at? Those are still fair questions to be asking.
Well, it's no different, because what individuals are looking for today, again, in restaurants, which is transparency, which we just talked about. Tell me about where this product came from. Sustainability, in the sense that did it come from 60 to 90 miles away? Mm-hmm. And obviously, what are the conditions? What were the conditions that the chickens were kept in? Or how are the hogs slaughtered? And what's the process of that? Is it humane? And all of those things are real important. And it's, again, it's a fascinating trip, which I've done before, and people are welcome to get in touch with me to do a little side trip in Illinois as far as where to go to spend a day or 2 days taking a look at Wisconsin and Illinois and Michigan and just going to farms.
Martin, something we've talked with Doug before about, but I'm interested to get your take on it, is when we sit down in a restaurant and the experience is not what we expect it to be, what do you like to hear coming from the people that are in your restaurants, and what's fair for us to be saying as consumers to you?
I mean, we really appreciate honest feedback, because that just makes us better. And, you know, if we get feedback, we can go back, because most of the time there's something behind it and we can go and fix it. So the next customer has a better experience. Some of our customers, they, you know, just don't have a good experience, and mm-hmm. we want to make it better.
So there's no don't feel bad about complaining, I guess, is the key, is what you're telling us.
Yes, give us your honest feedback.
Yeah.
If it's good, let us know. If it's not so good, let us know as well.
And one of the things I like about how you do business is you sort of empower your servers to say, so you don't have to make a big drama about it.
Yeah, our employees are empowered to, if you don't like your food, to come and take care of it.
Yeah. So, Doug, again, the room smells delicious. What are we going to be talking about with the food that's been prepared here? Can we talk about a little bit of that? Because it smells delicious.
Well, we certainly can talk about it, but you are unfortunately asking the wrong person, because I was not up early this morning making it, right.
Very
Martin
early
was.
This morning, Martin.
I am going to partake with you in some of the fine things that we found at the market. And there's a little bit of history that's with us as well that Martin can discuss, that he used to have at his own farm in Austria. Fortunately, this was grown nearby, not in Austria. Mm-hmm. So we will give Martin the opportunity to really go through some of the great things that he's put together. And we also have some biscuits we picked up this morning at a nearby bakery that we can try some of the jams and jellies that mm-hmm. are predominantly, actually, most of the fruits are out of Michigan. A lot of fruits are out of Michigan. And a lot of the produce is out of Illinois, along with livestock. So it's interesting when you go to the different areas within the market and finding out where they're grown, that many of the different things are divided by regional products.
Mm-hmm. Martin, again, thank you for getting up early to make stuff. So give us a sense of what you made here.
Yeah, so everything I brought, we picked up at the farmer's market on Saturday. And then Doug already mentioned it. I found some elderberries, and I made a syrup out of it, or elderflower, I gotta say. I made a syrup out of it, and when I grew up, we had elderflower trees around the house, around the stables, everywhere. I have never seen them here in the United States until we went to the farmer's market, and I was so excited. So I made that syrup with a little sparkling water for you guys. It's very refreshing. It's very sweet. Then also I made a little salad, and I know it's early for you guys, but Doc told me it's okay because you guys get up early.
It's so almost lunchtime. Yeah.
For you, it's lunchtime now. So we get some red butter lettuce with some fresh strawberries, radishes, and I put a little bit of elderflower on there. There's a couple dressings. We did a barbecue jalapeno dressing, and then I have a sweet onion dressing. And then also I did a little bit, we got some pasture-raised Kinnikinnick chicken with their own bacon, and I made a fennel snow pea slaw for that, and it's topped with a little bit of young garlic.
When you put together flavors, I mean, you've described a couple of different flavors here of different things. Does that change as the seasons change too? Do you change the flavors that you make these different things with?
Yeah, because you got to make sure, you know, your dressings go with the right lettuce. Mm-hmm. If you have a lettuce who is like an arugula, who is a little pungent, a little peppery, you want to have probably a little sweeter dressing with it. If you have a butter lettuce like this, you probably want a spicier dressing. Mm. So, of course, you got to pair it as it goes. For example, with the fennel slaw, fennel, you know, that anise flavor still holds a little sweet. I like to use a sharp white balsamic for it. So, yeah, you go and match up your ingredients with your seasonings.
Is there a key to finding the best produce when you're out at these farmers markets? What are the things you look for? Let's say with the fennel that you found, or with the lettuce. What do you look for? How do you know you found the perfect bunch?
I mean, you look for freshness. Mm-hmm. And then going back what Doc said before, like you look at the farmers. Like for me, a farmer with clean hands is not a farmer.
that's
where you see the difference as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you got those, we call them the paddlers, the guys who buy their product at Costco or wherever else, or at some major distributor. You see who has the good product, and you know, freshness. You'll see if something's been in a warehouse for a few days, you know, you just see that it's not fresh anymore. The color is not as good. You see a lot of already wilted lettuce. Just look for crisp and fresh.
This is something I've always wondered, too, going to farmers markets, because I've always been kind of shy about doing this. Is it okay to ask to taste the stuff? Like, if you come across a bunch of carrots, can I have a piece of that carrot to see what it tastes like?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not out of the ordinary.
Yeah, before you buy it, take a piece. Try it.
And they'll expect you to do that?
Oh, yes. They actually like that.
I would do it in your Whole Foods. I mean, right. I think the fact is
really?
You... Oh. Listen,
I'm always scared to do that. I don't know why.
Well, maybe now
the grab a grape or something.
They're going to be watching you anyways.
Have a robot deliver the grape or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's. Listen, it's no different in a restaurant to ask for wine. It's no different than you should be able to go to anywhere and sample. You sample at ice cream parlors. So, I mean, you should have the opportunity to see if that's right. And many of them will have small samples for you to try anyways.
Right.
And that could be a cheeses and everything else. One quick point before we start wrapping things up. If you don't have time to go to a farmer's market, there's something called CSAs. And CSAs are what I'll say is bringing them to your home or to your area. And there are many farms, and again, I really like these guys at Nicholas Farm, and that's spelled. Their website is www.nicholsfarm.com, and what they'll do is they bring to different locations or your house boxes of product that they have harvested that particular week. And we'll deliver it either, again, to a central location in your suburban area, or they'll deliver it directly to you so that you are getting the best of the best that week. And actually, that's something that you're going to start seeing restaurants do. Have a pie made in Michigan and dropped off at a restaurant, and then you can order that pie and take that with you as well.
Yeah, that's something that Amazon can't do right now, but I suspect that after buying Whole Foods, that's what they want to do, right?
I think it's going to be very interesting how that integration is going to happen. Ultimately, that will happen. From what I understand, there's two different cultures happening that are going to be combining, and I'm not sure if it's going to be like United and Continental was. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, Doug Martin, thanks for being here this morning. Let's dig in to see some of this food, taste some of this food.
All right, let's eat.
Doug Roth is the president and founder of Playground Hospitality. Martin Pfefferkorn is the director of culinary experiences at Hyatt Hotels. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell with Doug and Martin, and we'll post the expanded chat in the podcast of the opening bell at WGN Radio. You can find Doug, by the way, online at playgroundhospitality.com.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Off about 8 points now. A lot of weakness, too, in the NASDAQ. Silver and gold trading higher. Now the latest on commodities and agriculture. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Let me begin this report by sending out a special thank you to the nice people at the Secretary of State's office in Woodstock, Illinois. I got my driver's license renewed and passed all of the tests, and they are all really nice people at Woodstock. So thank you. Okay, looking at cattle and hogs yesterday, cattle mostly lower on technical selling. Hogs were mixed. But at the end of the day, the June live cattle contract came back to end 95 cents higher at 120.35. Meanwhile, August feeder cattle down 7 cents at 143.92. And the August hog contract up 32 cents at $81.65 a hundredweight. Some strength in wheat futures yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade because of concern over the wheat crop. Not in this country, but in France, because there was further decline in spring wheat condition ratings here that surprised some traders. But it came at the same time that concern about damage to French wheat is currently looked at as a threat from a heat wave moving in there. July wheat settled up 5.5 cents a bushel for the day. July corn fell 5.25 cents a bushel, and soybeans fell 10 cents a bushel in yesterday's trade. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, June 21st, 2017. National Association of Realtors releases existing home sales for May. Glassdoor is out today with its list of the highest-rated CEOs as ranked by employees. Tops this year, the CEO of the Clorox company, Ben O'Dorer, who has a 99% approval rating by employees. J.D. Power issues its initial quality study today. The study looks at problems experienced by vehicle owners in the first 90 days of ownership. House Appropriations and Finance Services Subcommittee holds a hearing on the FY 2018 federal budget. There's a new study coming out today from Johns Hopkins University that finds fathers' increased involvement with children decreases the likelihood of child obesity and increases the likelihood of healthy children. Special Counsel Robert Mueller heads to Capitol Hill today for a closed meeting with the Senate Judiciary Committee. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, June 21st.